In the matter of Francis Green versus Monmouth University, can we please have appearances of counsel? Welcome, counsel. Mr. Levis, please go ahead.
The issue which brings us here is who decides whether an event or an activity that's occurring at an educational institution is part of that educational institution's mission, and whether that decision is capable of being challenged. If the educational entity by itself amends its or creates its mission statement and makes it as broad as it chooses, then the immunity provided under the Appellate Division decision is essentially absolute. And that's not what the Charitable Immunity Act was intended to serve, and it's not what the underlying cases both from this court and from the Appellate Division talk about. Immunity is not absolute. And an educational institution, and here in particular both on the broad policy and specific to Appellant Francis Green, Monmouth University's mission is not to provide a venue for commercial acts that could play elsewhere. Its mission is not part to provide a rental facility, its MAC, its arena, for commercial activities. Its mission statement describes part of its mission being to provide arts, education, music, film, events, sports, all noble ventures and all things that contribute to society. But in some ways, every activity or something that hasn't been done before is educational. We all learn that at an early age, that when you do something new or you see something different, it's educational.
We know bowling and drinking and life experience went too far in one case, correct?
That was the Connell case, I believe. And that's an interesting situation because there the court very quickly recognized that student Connell was a beneficiary because he was a student there.
No, I was thinking of the case, I think it's Kirby, where they were arguing that life experience from participating in bowling and drinking activities went a bit too far to meet the broad definition of what's educational.
So I think that's probably at the outer end of the spectrum,
I would agree.
But I also, to retain credibility and candor, I understand that all music at some level, even the stuff that I don't like to listen to, presumably has some type of an educational component.
Well, let's break down the certificate, since your argument is focusing on that, and I think properly so. It talks about the general purposes of education, and I think that there's another part that talks about the fact that an educational institution is not a monastery. It is providing educational services to the community, public at large, not just its students. You would agree with that, don't you?
I agree that there is some benefit to the community at large in the state of New Jersey in having institutions like Monmouth University there, primarily because they can provide opportunities that may not be available in the commercial market.
Why does that limitation have to exist in order for an institution to provide educational services that are generally promoting of good public interests to more than just the student population, but to the community at large?
I apologize. I missed the first step, Justice Vecchia.
Why would we read? I'm looking at the language in the certificate, Mr. Levis, that says, to provide for the holding of meetings and events open to the public, including, and it says classes, conferences, concerts is one of the things that's specifically listed. Why is that not fulfilling a general educational purpose to open up those kinds of activities on a school campus to a larger community, public community, not just the student population?
So my response would be that at some level, going to Your Honor's first point, that you can argue that anything's educational, in some way, anything that is offered that someone otherwise won't have access to, one could say has a benefit, has an educational value.
So suppose in this case the university had offered this concert all on its own and billed it as an arts / cultural festival. Would they be subject to the immunity?
So I would have a more difficult argument, and I would argue to you that because it's a commercial band and a commercial entity, it differs from the symphony, the lax situation. But candidly, Your Honor, universities do that. They do that in spring flings. They bring in a high-level band, and they make it available to their students. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that long ago that we all attended those events. That is part of education.
For some of us, it was quite a while ago.
We like to think not so long.
As I'm staring at someone getting ready for college. But that's not this case. Yeah. And I'm trying to stay on the broader issue and not Francis Green.
You made a comment that suggested that art has to be not commercially available in order to be educational. If lax had been just slightly different and an outside paid symphony orchestra had come in and played at Princeton, you're not saying it would have come out differently.
Well, I think it may have, because if you look at the lax court, they focus on the fact that it was a nonprofit entity,
right,
supporting a nonprofit entity. And
I understand that, and the money all went to a nonprofit. But if Princeton had said, for our students, for the community of Princeton, we're going to have a series of classical concerts and brought in entities from the outside whose CDs are available, who are paid, who are professionals, musicians. Do you think that case would have come out differently?
Probably wouldn't have the case-specific argument that I have here. And now we're stepping off of the broad issue and into this specific case. Mm-hmm. But that's not what happened here. What happened here, and this is where the dissent and the majority in the appellate division seem to tangle a little bit, because there's a discussion about whether we should be looking at the particular art and whether Martina McBride is art or whether it's not art. That's not really... That is a potential of a rabbit hole and not where we're going.
So what should we be looking at? Tell us the standard. What are the factors? What's the legal test that should apply to decide in this and the next case?
So there has to be an objective criteria or standard for what the entity's purpose is, not defined by its mission statement, because as we know from the DeVries case, the mission statement alone, what I say I'm going to do, shouldn't guide me. But I think that because it's an immunity, and so at some level it is a legal analysis, not just a factual jury issue, there has to be an objective assessment of what the university, what the entity is actually there to accomplish and what it's trying to accomplish. And in this particular case, and as a broader set, are they doing something that they are directly involved in, that they are coordinating, that they are supporting either financially or through making facilities that would otherwise not be available? In the case of an educational institution, which is organized for educational purposes, so taking out the Ryan case, where you had the church, but its purpose was to make its space available for organizations that couldn't meet elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't an educational institution quite like Monmouth University, but it still held itself out as an educational institution, not as a charitable entity. And there's a difference when we look at how the finances affect. But for an educational institution, is this something that, using our common sense that's guided us always, something that an educational institution does? What Monmouth was doing here was renting out empty space. And whether they were making a large profit on it or simply cutting even or not leaving space available, they were doing something that just as easily could have been done at the PNC Arts Center. They weren't fulfilling an educational need on this concert, saying
well,
to someone else,
your argument frames it that way, but I'm sure your adversary would say, we have facilities, we like to have concerts and those kinds of activities for our students and for the community at large to congregate on our premises and hear these concerts. We choose not to be the ones to engage in the machinery that actually bring them here. And I don't see anywhere in our case law that prohibits them from contracting with a for-profit entity in order to accomplish that. Your argument takes the next step of then drilling down on whether or not Monmouth University is making a profit off of this. So maybe that's where there is room for greater factual scrutiny that might belong in front of a jury to determine whether or not a profit is being made or not. But I'm having a hard time accepting your broad argument that a mission statement and this mission statement in particular somehow is too broad or too deferential to the institution to fulfill the charitable immunity purposes?
Well, I think I can address that, because the mission statement says we hold events. So one could bring in a monster truck rally.
But this says concerts.
Well,
why go to the broader term events when we have a more narrow term to use?
Well, but it also provides that they offer films. One would have a difficult time defending as educational at any level certain category of films. No one would seriously challenge if the Monmouth University rented its facility out to adult entertainment.
But in this context, it's more challenging. To say we should have an objective review of the mission statement, what if the university came forward and said, we want to promote country western music in Monmouth County? It's not as popular here as it is in other parts of the country. We want to expose people to it. How would we decide whether that was or was not under the statute?
So I don't know that there's a bright line ability to do that, Your Honor, and that's why there is a factual assessment, because we are forced to reconcile with they do want to offer a broad spectrum of activities, but they're not supposed to hide behind an immunity when they're not directly involved in it, they're not making the decision about the educational benefit that's being provided.
Who is making it? If they're not making the decision what they're providing, who is making it? You?
In this particular
case? In any case.
The decision on whether it's immune or the decision
whether it's immune? Whether it's educational or not. Because you just said it's not. And some of us may think it is.
So
who decides that?
I'm trying to avoid the situation, because I think that the dissent was correct. We don't want to be looking at each particular type of music and voting on who likes it and who doesn't.
And isn't that why it would make more sense to focus, as Justice Levecchia was questioning you, on the mechanisms, the profit motive, instead of some sort of objective assessment of whether this is an appropriate means of getting music out to the public?
But I'm not sure that the profit motive of itself is necessarily the right criteria. The mechanism is exactly the criteria. How did this come about? And focusing on why is this concert taking place here? Is it, as Your Honors have suggested, that someone said this community would benefit from exposure to this type of music, when the argument slides a little bit, or the situation we have here where the university says we have space available, whoever they are, will pay to bring their acts in. It will be sold, not made available to them.
But bear in mind, please, that any principle that this court enunciates here affects other cases. And if where you are going is that when they bring in a profession, an entertainment professional, for lack of a more precise word, and have that entertainment professional sell the tickets, get the artists, they have the contacts, they know what they have to do in terms of getting license fees and so forth, which a university may not have the people expert in, that converts it takes it outside of the immunity. In other words, if what you're saying is that the mechanism here triggers the loss of immunity, and if we adopted that, we would be saying to universities and other nonprofit entities, don't seek a professional to set up your educational events because you've just lost your immunity.
Well, but we might be saying stay involved in it. Don't just.
Well, stay involved in what sense? I mean, what does that mean? Go to a meeting, approve what's going on, and stay involved. I'm sure that if there were an entertainer brought in, and I don't want to speculate on who that would be, but if there were an entertainer brought in who was offensive to the purposes of Monmouth, they would not have had the concert. They simply would have. I'm sure they had some level of veto power over who this was. Obviously, Martina McBride wasn't in that category. But do you see what I'm getting at? If what you're saying is that the fact that they brought in a promoter to do the things that promoters do, because the university may not have a department of events that has that level of expertise to be able to make sure they're legally handling it right, licensing and so forth, they don't have the contacts with the entertainment industry, if that takes them outside of the immunity, then we're going to be basically saying to all of those nonprofits, you can't use those professionals.
Well, I don't believe we're saying they can't use the professionals. We're saying they need to retain a level of involvement. And I go back to where I started,
Why is that? Assume for this question that it is indisputably a legitimate educational a component of their educational mission. Why does it matter if they retain someone to handle security, to handle ticketing, and so on?
Because at some point we have to differentiate between Monmouth University or an educational institution and Madison Square Garden. And if we're going to say that everything that Monmouth brings in, with the exception of the outer quadrant, that things that are fundamentally unacceptable, everything else they bring in is part of education, and they can have whoever they want run it, and they can have whoever they want charge and make a profit, and that's what it is, and it's not for students, it's for everyone out there, then what are they doing that's different from the PNC Arts Center or Madison Square Garden?
Does it make a difference for purpose of the charitable community, whether it's the citizens who are benefit from the, or only the students? Is there a distinction there in the statute?
So,
because I haven't seen
yes and no. The cases that involve students in universities uniformly hold you're a beneficiary. Doesn't matter. There's no further argument. Mm-hmm. There are arguments that if there are people who are from outside the community, DeVries versus Habitat for Humanity, the concept of beneficiary is more factually sensitive. And that is part of this. It goes back to, was Frances Green a beneficiary of Monmouth University? Did she benefit from the fact that they held a concert? Absolutely. She saw the concert there. It was 20 minutes closer to her house than somewhere else. But is she a benefit of the Monmouth University's educational mission by virtue of the fact that they rented out their space? And that's where I think we're taking this immunity and we're letting Monmouth do whatever it wants with it to wrap itself in it. You want to have a bar. You want to hold concerts and rent it out, do so. You want to have adult films, you want to have a monster truck rally, whatever you want.
So come back and,
sure,
because of the difficulty of this issue, take a stab at writing a paragraph and opinion for us. What is the standard that should be applied to determine this case and others like it?
The standard that should be applied is one that objectively meets the criteria for the commonly held understanding of what educational institutions do.
And how would that be decided?
At the threshold level, it is a matter of law because it's a legislative function that establishes an immunity.
Well, I mean, what would we look to in order to make the determination as to whether this objectively meets the criteria?
I think we have nothing more objective to guide us than common experience. But if we look at what universities were chartered to do, since we are looking at Monmouth University's certificate of incorporation, the concepts of teaching and of developing citizenship and of general, and I'm using a broad term, but it is undefinable in many ways, education, is renting space for a commercial concert, an educational opportunity, and this is where I think it steps in, that would not occur but for the charitable function of the entity being there.
Well, the entity wouldn't be there without the charitable function.
No, I may
so,
have... Maybe
so what I'm, does that mean? To say they wouldn't be doing it if they weren't charitable?
Wouldn't be happening here. The issue in going back to LAX, and perhaps I'm reading a little bit in between the lines in LAX, but the court talks about a symphony, a nonprofit, needed support, things that wouldn't have happened if this educational institution didn't facilitate it.
But how can you, what does that mean? That means if you rent out space to a group in the community, you have to prove, the institution would have to prove that that group had no other available space?
It's not.
That's
no
a
other,
pretty cumbersome standard.
But there's two issues there, Your Honor. First off is that Monmouth University's mission is not about renting space to the community. That was the situation in...
But if the only way they can accomplish the educational purpose by renting space, are you suggesting that the rule is that if any profit's made by anyone, then it's no longer educational?
No, because we've recognized that an entity may use fundraising activities to generate revenue for itself. I recognize that there can be some degree of...
Fundraising is different from charging for tickets. So are you saying if someone such as this here, if they charge for tickets and it's no longer educational, we ignore or separate the value of the concert and say it's not because money was made by the performer?
Is that
the rule you're suggesting?
I don't think that's a fair statement, but at the same time, I understand that Monmouth University wasn't charging here. Ticketron was. And again,
I go back. Monmouth was getting a share of the tickets.
Monmouth was getting a share of the beer garden, and a share of the T-shirt sales, and covered for its Mac Arena.
Okay,
correct.
But that, here again, you're very focused on the fact that the ticket agent was involved. So if that's the test, and I think that you've come back to that now a couple times, if that's the test, then are we to assume that we're fulfilling the legislative purpose in the Charitable Immunity Act by saying to nonprofits, don't get these professional ticket agents or security firms or licensing fee people or people who work with the actors' unions, all these people who may be necessary to put on a performance, don't use them? Because you lose your immunity.
Of course not, but the very difficult challenge that you've issued for me, and I'm struggling with it, but I think it's where we should be going, is reminding educational institutions or charities or entities that have these immunities, I hate the phrase, stay in your lane, but do what it is that you're here to do. And providing a venue for commercial concerts is not what colleges are there to do.
But you're really narrowing what the university did. They brought in this woman who many people might not know about, that there is an activity going on that certainly has an educational benefit and service to the community, and because they bring in Ticketron and have someone else facilitate the selling of tickets and bringing in of the concert, drawing a bright line, whereas I think what you're saying is that had they been more involved in the ticket taking and they had been more involved in the processing, this wouldn't be an issue for you.
Well, I'm recognizing the fact that because there is no easy bright line, this immunity essentially becomes absolute. That if Monmouth says, this is something we're going to do because we think it adds value to the community, there's no mechanism, certainly not under the Appellate Division decision, to challenge it.
I'll tell you what I'm sorry, Justin.
No, good.
I tell you what sort of confuses me. A lot of things confuse me, but in this particular case, objective standard says to me, it's a legal question, this is the threshold, as the chief asked, this is the rule that you apply. But you seem to be saying we need to do a subjective fact analysis to decide what is Mama's primary purpose in doing this concert. Is it to generate money by renting their venue, or is it to provide an educational service to the community and the students? That's a totally fact-sensitive question. That is not an objective standard unless you say whatever their primary purpose is. Is that what you're saying? I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know.
I don't know how to get around that, and I've struggled with this both at the Appellate Division and here, that at every level, and I think that's what the dissent and the majority at the Appellate Division struggles with, mm-hmm. is there is a subjective analysis. And the dissent talks about not going down a rabbit hole. Is it Hamlet or is it some other theater that may not be as well ingrained? There is a subjective analysis. You can't get around it.
It's always going to be a fact question, though. There is no objective standard, is there?
Well, there can be at least a threshold legal issue of, is the university in asserting facts that would support an immunity if found to exist. So
they did here. They asserted the facts, but you're saying the jury's got to decide it.
That's correct on this case, okay. Your Honor.
Could there ever be summary judgment under your analysis, or would it always go to a jury?
I hate to say never. And
It seems like a never to me from the argument you're making.
Well, but if we look at some of the other cases, if we've got nonprofits, if we've got, because I think there's some facts that can be dealt with by requests for admissions.
But if there's a profit, such as this, it always goes to a jury? The analysis as to whether it's educational or not? Must it always go to a jury under your analysis?
I'm less concerned with whether it's educational and more with whether it's part of Monmouth University's underlying purpose. And maybe there's some gray in there. Because, as I started with, anything is educational at some level.
Can I ask you a question about what goes to the jury? They've asserted the defense of charitable immunity. You're raising some fact questions about whether or not the activity here is not within the protected realm of acting as an educational institution, the third prong of the test, if you will. And you're raising some factual questions about it. But are you suggesting that once those fact questions are resolved, assuming there are genuine issues of material fact about that, the jury then decides the legal question of whether or not immunity attaches?
No. And I do understand that there could be some awkwardness initially in understanding how the factual determinations would be found. I'm trying to envision a verdict sheet.
I'm trying to envision it also because I really haven't seen something like this before where we're going to have juries across the state making individual determinations of applications of charitable immunity.
No, I think that in the multitude of cases or in the majority of cases, you won't be dealing with the outliers where you have here that you have not just involvement by a third party, but essentially total control, where you don't have nonprofits supporting a nonprofit. I think that in that way, this case is sort of a perfect storm. We talked about Martina McBride being country music.
Let me just ask you a very basic question. Are you arguing for a jury determination of whether charitable immunity applies?
I think there has to be a jury determination as to whether the facts that the entity is offering in support of its charitable immunity, I think that would have to be.
Can you point us to any case that sent that issue to a jury?
Whether facts
charitable
of
immunity, the application of charitable immunity, has ever been decided by a jury under our statute?
No, but I'm thinking of cases where there was a remand for determination about, for example, the profit-making motives or...
Remand to the trial court?
I apologize.
Courts fact-find on these issues, right? Judges fact-find on these issues. Do you understand the...
I do understand completely, and in a sense it's almost a 104 hearing where the court needs to make a fact-finding inquiry.
Court does, not jury. I think where at least I was sidetracked is it seemed like you were arguing for the jury to make this determination.
Well, I think that there are questions on the facts of this particular case which are plainly disputed, and they're factual issues.
But courts make determinations on questions of immunity when they're disputed.
100%. I absolutely have been before this court previously on Title 59 issues.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The threshold question of whether an immunity applies is a legal question.
Right.
But if there are disputed facts underlying the application of that immunity, it is a fact issue. And Your Honor is correct. I can't cite to a decision
it's
where...
It's a fact issue that the court can actually resolve that fact issue, correct?
I would have to agree. I'm not sure that it's always going to be the case, but because I'm imagining there would be situations where there are factual disputes that involve issues of credibility, but by and large, the factual determination would be for a court.
And before you complete your argument, help us, if you would, on the factors a court should look at in making that determination. You've talked about the educational component of the mission, the continued involvement you've put forward, the fact that this is a commercial activity. What other types of factors do you believe should be in the mix?
So the nature of the involvement of the educational institution and its community, and by that I mean, in this case, there was broad advertising far beyond the confines of Monmouth University. Is the university providing something for its community? Again, something that wouldn't otherwise be there, but we have the benefit of having a university.
Let me just ask you this, because you come back to this a couple of times, and I'm just, as we think about it from a trial court trying to make a determination, how does a court determine that something would not be there but for the charitable purpose of the immunity?
So,
I mean, a concert happens, right? Whoever. A play happens. Does the university or the entity have the obligation to prove that if it weren't for us, that wouldn't have happened.
So I'm not saying that the university shouldn't have allowed the concert here. Not at all.
No. I'm not saying that. You a couple of times said there has to be something that wouldn't happen but for the university.
How do you prove the negative?
How do you prove? The chief just said that in several
words.
It
is difficult to prove a negative. We have our common wisdom. I think I might be.
That's not really common wisdom.
Well, but I think I might be standing in a different position in the court's eyes if they had brought in the Rolling Stones or something that unquestionably would have been able to put on their show anywhere else, and there's no readily discernible educational value. And country music is a little off mainstream here in New Jersey. So there's something appealing. And the Appellate Division talked about that, that country music.
So rock and roll is not educational, but country music maybe because it's not as common in the state. Is that the standard?
No, rock and roll can be, but we go
not
back
the Stones,
to
apparently.
What was what is Monmouth doing? Is Monmouth providing educational opportunity, or are they just allowing someone to host a concert?
Well, the IRS acknowledges that promotion of the arts and culture is a legitimate educational purpose. For, so why are we trying to interpret our own statute more narrowly than they would?
Because, again, we're not, at least I'm not arguing that listening to Martina McBride or most music entirely lacks culture and art. I can't make that argument. The question is whether this is something, this concert is something that by renting its space out, Monmouth University was pursuing its mission for which we give it this broad, we, the legislature of the state of New Jersey, this immunity.
But the legislature tells us to interpret and apply it liberally.
But liberally and absolutely are not the same thing. And I can't envision a situation under this statute where if Monmouth says, we're going to hold monster truck rallies here because they're an event and someone is injured.
I know you keep coming to the monster rally. This is not the monster rally.
But this is also not a symphony, and it's not Hamlet. So we can readily discern.
Some people maybe. I'm sure a lot of country western fans have never heard. Listen to or saw Hamlet, or
you wouldn't suggest that by conducting this kind of activity on the campus that the university would lose its nonprofit status or its, you know.
No, I'm not suggesting that. We start out with if the university hired them and brought them in and said, let's put together a student committee to go pick the act you want for Spring Fling. I think that just at a very broad level sends a message that the university is doing something for its community. There is a factual disconnect on this case, which is not a bright line necessarily for other cases, but I do have the facts that are before me.
You do, but the university has its certificate and the language in its certificate, and if they are in good faith acting within the bounds of that language, shouldn't the immunity attach for that organization?
There has to be some mechanism to challenge that immunity to say, wait a minute. You're not entitled to, this is not what the legislature intended. Yes, Monmouth, you say you want to provide music, you want to provide art, but that doesn't give you the ability then to put on whatever you want, call it art, and shield yourself from the same liability that everyone else would be subject to. This immunity is broader than the Tort Claims Act. This immunity is absolute.
Isn't that a question for the legislature?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
We read it, we follow it, we're not creating the policy. You have an argument that it's too broad, but isn't that really an issue that should be put before the legislature?
No, because my argument's not that the legislation is too broad, it's the application of it's too broad. And going back to the dissent, talks about whether lax was decided correctly, whether holding a symphony is education. I would concede that offering music, I keep it coming back to it, but I think it's undisputed. Music has an educational value.
And that would apply, by the way, even if in lax they brought in ticket promoters to handle the sale and the management of the concert, or would it not?
I think they may have, although in lax the people attending were subscribers.
Yeah, so, but I'm not asking about that. I know you had focused on involvement of the university in the event itself. Would it matter in lax if the facts were changed in that way?
Only bringing in professional ticket brokers? No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't.
Let me ask you, if I could follow up to you. Are you done? Two things that I think you're telling us not to consider. One, you're telling us not to judge what is art and what is educational.
I recognize that that is too subjective an evaluation.
Okay. And two, I think I'm hearing you say that don't make it a dollar profit puts them out of the immunity, a dollar loss puts them in.
I think our cases have set that standard that an entity is allowed either to make money or to use fundraising.
Okay. And what you're offering us in terms of the standard is to focus on level of involvement by the university.
Level of involvement and, although I recognize it may be difficult and awkward, there is a fundamental sense of, I call it common knowledge, but what does a university do? All of us went to universities. We understand that the offerings are broad and they provide benefits to the community, but there have to be limitations on immunity.
That part I'm not sure, and I want to just ask one question. Tell us what that means. What is this common knowledge? Can we articulate this common knowledge? Because if we understand that if we say the standard is what is our common knowledge of what universities do, we are creating an industry of litigation over what common knowledge is. And if we define it, which I think you're suggesting we should, say what is common knowledge about the purpose of university, what's the definition?
The definition is a place of higher education and learning. And activities that are devoted or intended for higher education and learning would fall under that broad definition.
So tell us, in whatever terms you think is sensible, why promotion of a chamber symphony orchestra is okay, entitles you to the immunity, but a country western concert does not.
I'm focused more on the fact that the Country Western Act that was commercially on a tour all over the country and was able to support itself and was generating revenue is a different creature and event and opportunity than a chamber symphony orchestra that wouldn't survive if there wasn't public funding.
So if a chamber symphony had been commercially viable, you'd say that was not okay either?
I think it would be a much closer argument to what I have here if there was a nationally recognized musical group of any genre that was touring and happened to go to a particular location simply because they rented that spot as opposed to the art center. This is a commercial entity.
So if Monmouth University brought in the Philharmonic, immunity would not apply?
It would depend upon the circumstances in which they brought in the Philharmonic, because I don't think the inquiry should be classical music is more educational than rock and roll. But I do think there would be an analysis of why is the Philharmonic here? Because the Board of Trustees or the Arts Department or the Student Event Council said this is something we want, versus a contract, here's our arena, you fill it, and if you go too far to the outside, you're not bringing Eminem here. If you go too far out, we're going to veto it, but otherwise it's on you and just pay us our money. There is a difference.
And it has to do with the viability or the potential for survival of the group if it didn't have this venue?
I think survival is a strong term, but certainly as I read all of the cases, whether it's Lax and Ryan and Beaker, where the, I think it was a YMCA, and a facility, Morristown Heart, was making its space available to entities that wouldn't otherwise be able to have a space. And you've challenged me on, is that the sine qua non? But that's what the court has focused on. Are you providing a service to these places to meet that wouldn't otherwise have a place?
Was Beaker an educational immunity?
Beaker was a charitable entity
which Ryan says we look at differently than educational and religious immunities. Those are more understood terms. Charitable requires a different kind of analysis to drill down on what was intended by the legislature.
But Beaker and Ryan sliced that very thin, because both of them, their mission purpose was to make available space for entities that wouldn't have a place to meet otherwise. In Ryan, it was the Mothers Group. And because the entity in Ryan was organized as an educational institution, it didn't have to undergo this prong one and prong two.
Right.
But in Beaker, it was the same thing. It was a charitable entity who said, we're here to rent, to make space available for groups that wouldn't otherwise have space. So it was a men's basketball league.
Right, and a child got injured.
But they're doing the exact same thing. They're making space available. That's not what Monmouth's mission is. And Monmouth has never said, our mission is to make space available for organizations or entities that
can't. I understand as an advocate that's the way you're characterizing this, but we're pushing back that there's another way to look at it. It's the promotion of arts and experiences that are not otherwise generally available if the university did not make this happen. You call it a de facto tour stop in your brief.
Well, that's what Martina McBride calls it. There were 16 shows across the United States. This was the only one that was here in New Jersey. There was one in Pennsylvania. This is a tour. So it's not someone reach out and get this act who would otherwise not be here. It was an advertised tour stop. I apologize. I don't recall the appendix page, but it was right on the Ticketron announcement.
Anything you'd like to add to your argument? I think we have
it. Other than submitting my objective paragraph, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
thank you.
Mr. Kahn.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I'll try to, there's obviously very difficult questions, and it's hard to answer some of these questions. I'm going to try not to repeat everything that was said. I'm going to try to hone in on some of the questions that I heard, if I can remember all of them. But I will start out.
Can I focus you?
Yes.
At the outset, as a friend of the court, what's the standard we should apply? What are some of the factors we should look at to make a determination whether immunity applies?
I think most of the the factors that Mr. Levis started with are a good start. I don't think whether or not you hire a third-party vendor is a factor. That doesn't matter to me.
I'm sorry.
I don't believe whether or not the entity
so
hires.
So you differ from your co-counsel.
Well, I'll come back to that. I don't think that's a factor in and of itself.
What are the ones that we should look at?
Well, I think we have to look at, number one, more broadly, I think we have to really look at what educational interest is being promoted by the institution. So who puts on the performance is a factor. My example, I try to think of as clear and as blunt of an example as I could. If the university has a music class, student is injured, there's immunity. If the university puts on a music class and someone from the general public is allowed to sit in on the class, audit the class, we see that with senior citizens sometimes, immunity, because that non-student is still a beneficiary of the educational putting on the class. But again, when we have a concert, now let me say one more thing about the symphony, for example. If you look at the mission statement of the Princeton Symphony in the Lax case, in their mission statement, the specific mission is to promote 20th century classical music. I think they mentioned one artist by name. That is their goal, and people subscribe to listen to that symphony for that purpose. When Mr. Levis talks about the school, the university maintaining some level of involvement, what I think he means is if the school at some level makes a decision that, hey, we believe it's an educational benefit to the public to promote classical music, and we have a series of classical musicians come in, they've maintained some control over the process, there's immunity. Certainly, if their performers were...
Is there some significance to a series or subscribers? What?
Yes,
I think you're arguing for a are you taking the position that concerts, one-time concerts, not series, not subscriptions, one-time concerts put on by universities with members of the public coming in, not because they're auditing, but attending the concert, should be out of the immunity?
If we're going to adopt a standard that says, yes, that simply by putting on a concert, and we have 20 concerts over the course of the year with 20 different performers, if simply doing that to the general public, for profit or for selling tickets, that meets the educational mission set forth, that meets the mission, then, that is absolute immunity. Okay, what I'm saying is that if the school, in an effort to promote its educational interest, offer music classes to students and or non-students.
Music classes are really the easy case.
To focus in on a type of, it could be rock and roll.
Let's talk about concerts.
I think that if they simply allow, whether they use a third-party vendor or not, concerts, individual, solo, in this case a solo performance at this venue, I don't believe there should be immunity for that. The only way you find immunity for that is if you find that any concert, sporting event, anything that the university offers, anything that an educational institution offers, somehow fits within the definition of promoting education, then nothing will get by.
So most universities have survey courses for music. Many.
Yes.
Imagine that one does, where they cover the full array of music, including country western. What does that do to
If the university made a decision that as part of our mission to serve our students and the general public is to promote music in general, and they have 10 different artists from 10 different genres of music, hey, there might be immunity in that case. They've made a decision.
Well, that's what they say they do. They say we promote...
But there's no evidence
of that. We promote events. That's part of what we do. We promote concerts. It's in their mission statement that they promote concerts.
But there's no evidence in this case. There's no facts. There's nothing in the record that I can see that mission that they have had any relationship to the third-party vendor, in this case hiring on one day Martina McBride versus on another day whoever.
So you're going back. You seem to be closer to your colleague. Then you seem to be suggesting that the fact that the promoter made the artist decision is the critical event here.
again, I don't think the record speaks to this, but if the promoter made the decision, irrespective of any educational purpose or intent on the behalf of the college, I don't think immunity should apply there. If the college told the promoter, look, we're looking to promote classical music this month or this year.
What if the university says to the promoter and writes it all down at the strong suggestion of their general counsel, dear Mr. Promoter, Ms. Promoter, it's been wonderful dealing with you so far, and we want to promote all kinds of music, and therefore we are suggesting that you'll help our educational mission by providing us with various types of music. That's the answer?
That's a problem. I mean, if they're simply using the promoter in that case to sell the tickets, they're not using the promoter in that case to promote. They're determining what their educational interest is.
So they say, we believe the arts are important. We believe all kinds of different music is important. Get out there and promote, Mr. Promoter. That's in or out of the immunity?
I think that might be in immunity if that's the case.
What about what I think many universities do? I suspect if it went back for a record to be developed, you'd find out Monmouth has a lot of different concerts at this venue that may or may not be promoted by this promoter. Maybe they all are. But I suspect that if the New York Symphony, or even more importantly, better, the Philadelphia Symphony was touring, and the promoter said, listen, they're looking for concerts. They've never been here. We can get them to Monmouth. And they said, grab them.
Look,
we'll make money, you'll make money, they'll make money, and it's classical music. We want to promote that.
That example is fine, but what we're faced with there might be immunity in that case. But what we're faced with here is an absolute immunity simply because the 1956 mission statement says, as part of our educational, mission, we can have concerts among other things.
So you're agreeing with your colleague
in that case? There's absolute immunity if that's
so.
Standard.
You are agreeing with your colleague that whatever the facts are we have don't establish whether immunity applies, because you have to
Correct.
Look beyond how it came about and what they were thinking and what the agreement, if any, was. You have to go into all of that before we can make this determination.
I think that's correct, and I think the standard that has to come out of this is there has to be, those facts have to show that there's some relationship to the event hosted by the university and the promotion of its educational interests.
So I'm sorry, there must be
there's some relationship between the event being hosted, whether it's concert or any other event, relationship between the event being hosted and the educational interest that the university is trying to
And
promote.
Who judges that? If the university
sure.
says to the promoter, you will be promoting our educational interest if you have country music,
this is our educational interest. We think that promoting this type of activity will promote that both to our students and our general public.
If they say that, they're in the
immunity? I don't know how else to draw a test.
Well, in this instance, I think the record seems to indicate there was a reservation on the part of the university to nix any particular entertainer that was provided. Obviously, it didn't happen here. Why isn't that an exercise of educational interest by them not using their negative power?
Well, but let's look at the reverse. They're not saying this is the interest we're trying to promote. They're just saying that we have the last veto power if we don't like the act.
It could be that they like the fact that their students are being exposed to a diverse array of musical experiences.
Your Honor, Justice Levecchia, I concede that if we're going to simply look at those words that say in the mission statement, promoting a concert advances our educational interest, I can't respond to that. There's
nothing
to answer.
Just ticking off different factors, you've talked about educational interest and the maintaining involvement by the university. Are there other factors you would suggest?
No, I think the school's involvement, what the interest is being promoted. I think I do think the commercial aspect is important. I don't think it's a matter of making money or not. For example, if you look at LAX, one of the factors the court in LAX found was important was the fact that the symphony orchestra in that case only survived because of charitable contributions, which is not the case here. But the fact here that the school is making money, whether it's profit or not, who knows? I don't know from the record if it was or not. But the commercial aspect, I think, is a factor.
Commercial aspect, meaning, and we're drilling down a lot on this, but obviously it's a very difficult issue. The commercial aspect meaning the fact that a commercial promoter is involved? No, you said no to that.
No, no, okay. Right, I agree
so
with that.
So does it mean profit? And the concern about profit, profit's a nice bright line, but what does that say? That means if you lose, you know, $1,000, you're in. If you go over costs by $10, you're out. I mean, that's pretty arbitrary.
I don't know. If the school is looking to sleep on a charitable event, why would they charge anything? Hey, we're going to make our venue available both for our students and the general public.
So they can't,
let's have this concert.
They can't charge admission? Are you saying any charge of admission, whether profitable or not, it's amount?
Justice, we don't know. I don't know from this record.
No, I understand.
And I understand you're asking more broadly.
Yeah.
But I think those facts have to be developed. If the institution says we have to charge $10,000 because that's how much it costs to put the lights on and hire the vendors to, you know, to clean after or whatever it is, and we're breaking even, well, hey, then that may be a factor that weighs towards immunity. But I don't think there's a relationship here.
You suggested earlier,
because you're charging per ticket.
Yeah, so you suggested earlier that if a group that needed charitable contributions to stay alive, then it would be all right. But if it wasn't, so does that mean that they could only like bring in unsuccessful groups that don't make a lot of money? So instead of Martina McBride or someone like that, would it be someone nobody ever heard of who still plays country music?
No, but the Chief Justice asked me what factors I would, the Chief Justice asked me what factors I would consider. So if you have a truly charitable organization or nonprofit organization that only survives, as in the Princeton Symphony case, because they get, look, if you look back to the intent.
But does that make the successful group any less educational because they survive and they make money?
Well, we're mixing, look, the educational, again, the educational part of it is separate and apart from other types of charitable organizations.
The experience of different types of music, different types of life events. So,
as I
understand your argument, if they're not very good at it and don't make money, then it would be charitable, but if they're successful, then
no,
it's not charitable?
I'm not saying that, and I think I said before to Justice Lavecchia, if we're simply looking at whether or not a concert satisfies the educational mission because the mission statement says, you know, we offer concerts, I have nothing I can say. If that's the standard, the case is over, and there's absolute immunity. What I'm saying is that's one of the factors. Has to be one of the factors. That was the factor. Look, the appellate division in this case relies heavily upon LAX. If I was going to try to distinguish LAX, that's one of the distinguishing factors. So is that a factor?
So you're not offering so much a standard as a totality of the circumstances type of analysis with a number of different factors weighing against one another? Is that what?
I would like to make it, look, we put this right in our preliminary statement. I was going to answer, you know, the Chief Justice's question early on, which is what's the standard. We say right in our preliminary statement that our position is the standard should be that if something is rented out, no immunity. If the school puts it on, class, concert, whatever, immunity. I mean, that's as bright in line a standard as I can think of and that we offered.
What does it mean to put it on? Because I think you had said right at the first line you said was getting a promoter involved is not a problem, doesn't take them out of the so if the school puts it on, what does that mean? They fly solo?
No, it's a school orchestra. I mean, I can make it very simple. If I was going to have a real bright line, school orchestra, school offered music class, school offered sporting event, immunity. You know, we hire a commercial. You know, we hire. You know, we let a minor league lacrosse team use our facilities for their minor league or their professional league season. Is there immunity in that case? I would argue no. The school is allowing this outside entity, just like McBride.
So you're narrowing LAX, because LAX, the Princeton Symphony was not part of the Princeton University.
See, LAX is interesting because LAX talks more about the symphony, not the school. They kind of throw in the school at the end.
Right.
It's really an apples and oranges case. The only reason I brought up LAX was to talk about one of the factors being charitable contributions.
Right, but to
but
the
again,
extent
the
LAX
there
is relevant
was a throwaway. It was,
to the extent LAX is relevant to this case, it's the analogy between Princeton University and Monmouth University, mm-hmm. as both putting on other entities using their space to put on a concert. That's the relevance of the case.
Sure, I agree, and that's why I just tried to distinguish LAX in other ways.
Yeah, but I think under your standard, which you're right, is right in the beginning of your brief, LAX would come out differently.
So under your commercial
LAX would come out differently, yes.
Commercial aspect part of your suggestion, do you believe that the university would be expected to show along the lines of what, let's say, a state agency would have to show when it imposes fees, that they're not, that they're setting a fee at an amount that is designed not to engage in any additional profit, but only to recoup expenses. That's the kind of spreadsheet kind of analysis that a university would have to show for this kind of program?
I don't want to say if there's a dollar profit, that means there's no immunity, but otherwise, yes, I agree with that. If the school, the university, is setting forth a number so it doesn't lose money.
And that has to be done event by event, or can it be done on the basis of an approximation of what it costs to, you know, run that venue for different events?
That would still be, well, that would be event by event in any case. I mean, look, if to break even on the McBride concert, we have to charge $3 a ticket and we expect to sell X amount, but for some other event we have to make it $5 a ticket, you know, then the school at least is making some decision as to what it's going to cost and break even. If they're just simply saying we get $10,000 per event, $3 per ticket, and we lose $100 today, we make $1,000 tomorrow, I mean, that would, to me, if it's an outside, and again, not a school, you can certainly charge for a school course.
So you want an event-by-event financial analysis?
I think that's a factor. I think that has to be a factor. If we're going to consider at all the commercial nature of the event, again, I don't consider the school orchestra putting on a show, even if there's a charge for tickets, to be a commercial event. I consider that to be an event put on by the school community.
It's hard to imagine how the school could ever make a profit off of a school production, you know, considering the cost of the building and all, everything that goes into it. It's not an apples-to-apples analogy.
Well, but in that case, though, I mean, look, the students are paying tuition. They're promoting their educational mission by teaching their students music, allowing their students to perform. That is a much,
there's no question
mind,
that immunity applies in that situation. So let's. I don't think it's helpful.
I suspect that that the school's position on what constitutes a profit would include the capital cost of building an arena, which may, and obviously it's not on the record here, but may have envisioned the outside use, and they may have built a bigger, better arena for the students because they anticipated it would be amortized over time with outside entities. So is that all part of the factors?
Look, if we're going to include the commercial aspect, aspect as a factor, then we would need some analysis from the school as to how they came up with the prices they charge, whether in this case or any case. I mean, I can't tell from the record here what relevance the $10,000 had, what relevance the $3 per ticket had to what the school's purpose was. Were they looking to break even? Were they looking to make money? Were they looking to use, as Mr. Levis said, unused space? I mean, I don't know what they were doing.
Imagine a magnificent artist invited by the school. Yitzhak Perlman is invited to perform. Tell us what we should look to decide whether immunity would apply.
You should look to what purpose the school, what purpose or what goal the school was trying to promote by inviting that artist.
That's an easy one. We want to promote this magnificent classical music. I think you'd have a hard time arguing against that. So what else should we look to?
Well, I don't know. I think that was one of the two or three primary factors I mentioned before, which is what's the purpose? What was the school's purpose? How does it promote their educational mission to have this performance, this athletic event, you know, this, you know, whatever event they're trying to promote?
There has to be some
weighing of factors. We've listed a couple of factors. I don't know that I have any more.
To follow up on the chief's question, Mr. Perlman has a few other opportunities besides this one school, presumably in demand all over the world. So that factor would weigh in favor of the immunity.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I can't disagree with that. If he is coming because the school has, you know, the school finds that there is it serves their particular educational mission, not just broadly that, hey, we have any concert we want, and that serves some educational purpose. Because if that's the standard, again, there's no cases. And I don't think that's the intent.
So that's part of the problem, because I think you would agree that most universities could easily state, credibly, we want to promote the arts. And how then would one decide a case like that when you have an unqualifiedly gifted artist being invited?
I think that's the problem. Look, the language is broad, the language in the mission statement. Forget the language of the Act for a second. When the language of the mission statement is that broad, I have no easy or good answer to give you as to how do we distinguish. We've tried to set forth certain factors. I'd like to know that there was some collaborative decision-making process in the university that, hey, if among whoever, whatever group decides this, hey, this will promote our educational interest versus simply saying to whether it's a ticket seller within the school or an outside promoter, hey, just go book some acts so that we can make some money, use our space, and oh, by the way, we're promoting an educational interest because it's a concert. And that's what we're faced with here.
Did you have any?
No.
Anything else we'd like to add?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kahn. Mr. Kalin.
Okay, please, the court. Good morning, Justices. My client is asking that you please affirm the lower court decisions below in relation to the Charitable Immunity Act. Obviously, we are focusing on the third element of the Charitable Immunity Act and specifically the two prongs. And I think this morning we've heard argument mostly on the first of the two prongs, whether or not the Commonwealth University was engaging in an educational activity at the time of this incident. I think to a lesser extent there's been discussion on the second prong of the third element, which relates to whether or not plaintiff was a beneficiary. I believe at one point in time it was even conceded that plaintiff was a beneficiary, all things other considering that she was attending the concert itself. And I think if you look closely at the dissent below, it's almost conclusory. Plaintiff's not a beneficiary. There was really no analysis for that point. Of the two prongs, I think that's an easier case with regards to make, because plaintiff was there. She was not conferring a benefit. I think the distinctions that have been made in case law with regards to who is a beneficiary are easier, obviously, to draw. Was she conferring a benefit like a volunteer? In one case in particular, they remanded on that specific issue, or was she just receiving the benefit? So focusing more on, and before I move away specifically from that prong, I know that it's been written in briefs time and time again, a plaintiff had no relationship, she was not a member, quote unquote, she was not a student, if you will, if you're going to take it to that logical extension. But time and time again, the fact that the plaintiff in other cases was not a member did not seem to be a deterrent to immunity. In cases both on educational side as well as other factors, specifically the Loder case in particular involved a religious organization. The plaintiff there was not a member. It was not dispositive with regard to whether or not immunity applied. On the two educational cases, Latz and Ryan.
So you referred to Loder, correct?
Loder, yeah, that's correct. Which, to focus more on Loder, I think Loder has a lot of facts analogous to this case in particular. Plaintiff was not a member. Plaintiff was charged a fee in that case. The argument, one of the arguments there relied on by plaintiff was in the book bingo cases. But in that case, that's the case really. If you distinguish, if you take a timeline on the charitable immunity cases, Loder really sets in line this more expansive view of the immunity. If you go back to the Mayer and Book cases, they really don't discuss one way or the other on how expansive the immunity should be. But Loder in particular, on the religious case, recognizes that it's just not going in and receiving a sermon from a minister, if you will. It's the church providing the social interest to the community at whole, which is why I think Loder in particular, even though it's not an educational case, I think it's very analogous to this case in particular, because both the religious and the educational factors and organizations, they're not subject to greater scrutiny. That we require a financial analysis like cases would be for a charity organization. And just to touch upon the other ones, in particular, Ryan's interesting because that case dealt with two types of organizations, the education and the religious, and again, that plaintiff was not a member of either one, and that didn't seem to prevent immunity from happening in that case. Lastly, the Roberts case in particular, another educational case, not even at a university, but a little league, if you will, that plaintiff was not a member of that particular, I should say not a little league, but a mother's center in that case, which was remanded only on the volunteer issue. So again, the test is not a subjective test, as been suggested, and it's not really is a relation or not. It's whether or not one is bestowing or receiving a benefit, and clearly in this case, plaintiff was receiving a benefit from the attendance of the concert. So this goes back then to the first prong of the third element in particular, which, again, the dissent seems to, below really seems to focus on in particular. The two points that the dissent makes, and I think it's been touched upon a lot today. I don't want to talk about it too much because I think even plaintiff is conceding a little bit that the question whether or not this is art or not is really not the prime motivating factor so much as the other issue that's been presented by the dissent. And that's pretty much the inference that dissent drew, that what was Mammoth doing at the time. And the conclusion, which the majority points, it doesn't have any basis in fact, and just based on an assumption, was that it was promoting its bottom line. And this goes back again, if you're going to draw the cases on a continuum here, after Loader, just 6 years later, you get the O'Connell case, which specifically educational case there draws the line, makes it clear that we are not applying, that this court in particular says we are not applying the financial analysis to educational organizations.
So your certificate of incorporation has a very broad statement of purpose, as your colleagues have pointed out. Are there any musical performances that would not be covered and would not be subject to immunity under your argument?
With regards to whether or not, I think the question is, what are the limits here? I believe that looking back and taking a broader scope, the actual tests that have been developed over time, the three-part test, with the last part having two prongs, the framework itself does set aside and intrinsically sets aside what are the limits to the Charitable Immunity Act itself.
What are the limits?
One of the limits obviously would be if the plaintiff was volunteering at the time. We have numerous cases in the past indicating that a specific plaintiff was providing a benefit.
That's going into another prong. Let's stick with the third.
Right. So that would be the second prong of it. So, if there was no article of incorporations in particular, that could be a factor as well.
Are there any limits in light of your certificate of incorporation?
I would argue in that case, no, because it promotes the educational objective.
So could, if that's the case, could Mammoth University simply say, you know, New Jersey PAC, they bring in a lot of wonderful performers all throughout the year. We're going to book every single one of them. They'll perform on Saturday night at the PAC, and then they'll perform Sunday night at Mammoth. They're not going to get immunity at the PAC. They'll get immunity with us because we want to promote concerts. For an educational perspective, would that satisfy the statute?
I believe it would under the current case law because there's much deference that's been given to the term educational. As been recognized earlier this morning, the statute has to be liberally construed. It's mandated like that. The statute is remedial.
So is it your understanding that the legislature effectively intended to promote concerts as though they were being done in the general public?
Not as though they're being done in the general public. I think how you have to look at it is that it's being done to promote the educational interest of the community as a whole, as well as the students here. And I don't think these are the facts in this case in particular. I think the testimony says that there was only so many concerts at that venue in particular. But then it goes back to one of the issues that has been raised is, well, then do you have to look at the involvement of the school? And I think what's been ignored is that the school was involved in this. And I think it's been almost conceded that because of the Biker case and the Ryan case in particular, the hiring of professionals, which I think is an interest that this court and the state wants to promote. They want to hire the professionals to do the job in particular. That's still not so much a factor. But then Mammoth was involved. First of all, it's its own facility. The concert doesn't happen. The concert doesn't happen without the facility being there. As indicated, this was the only concert in New Jersey for Miss McBride. But they paid for expenses, they hired EMTs, they hired the fire department, they had police officers, the building engineers. They did have a right, a refusal. They could have said no to this, and anybody else in particular that they could have said. They signed the contract, so it was a collaborative effort in a sense.
Is it enough under the test, which requires the school to be engaged in the performance of its charitable objectives, to merely sign a contract with a promoter who will then make decisions on their own, right of veto, if you will, by the university, or must, in order to be engaged in the performance of charitable objectives, the school has to be more directly involved in the decision-making over the exact performers brought in?
I would say that getting to the involvement, it's almost going down to the arguments they want to make because they want to have certain tests here. I think the test is that whether they were engaged in performance at the time. And it goes back to the mission statement. And as you indicated, Justice, earlier, the mission statement plainly says that they're promoting concerts here as part of the educational.
Right, but to the extent the school is involved in this particular activity, and that's what we do look at under the first prong of the third element, was the school engaged enough in the decision-making over this particular concert?
Like the facts in this case,
yes,
does point to that, because you do have the testimony of both of the representatives from Mamas who talk specifically about the engagement and the factors I just laid out. The fact that they had to hire and pay for certain expenses, setting up the stage, pushing back and forth the stands,
But I don't recall them saying anything about the selection of the performer.
With regards to the selection of the performer, they have a right of disapproval with regards to that performer.
Is there anything in the record that suggests that somehow the Board of Governors or decision-makers, administrators at Monmouth affirmatively determined not to exercise their right of refusal?
In this case, well, obviously, since the concert happened, they didn't reject Ms. McBride.
I know, but was there some conscious decision not to veto this performance?
I don't think it was that thought out with regards to that set out,
okay,
with regards to that in particular. I think it was suggested they could have refused it, and they didn't in this case in particular. But Ms. Nagy testifies that anything in any concert hosted by the MAC is in furtherance of its overall achieving goals.
So we'll grant you this. Your test is a very simple one to apply.
Mm-hmm.
If Monmouth puts on a concert, it's covered.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree.
Has Monmouth ever exercised its negative power?
I'm not sure of that. You got it.
They didn't veto the Rolling Stones?
Not aware of that. So the other factors on the articles is interesting as well, because I know it's been pointed out, and I think that bolsters the case for Monmouth here, because the dissent wants to create that there's an issue of fact in here.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the articles exist bolsters, because the articles go back 60 years, and it specifically says concerts in there. So it's one of the goals that they want to promote, which obviously the majority below picks up, because the phrase specifically, it's a substantial and direct relationship to the goals at issue. But then there are cases, there have been cases in particular, where articles were either not mentioned or not even raised at all, and immunity did apply. So with regards to that, even without the articles, based on how education has been interpreted over the years by the courts liberally, you could even say that the concert at issue just intrinsically is promoting an educational value and promotion of that case. In particular, Lax, for instance, I know it was said earlier that there was something about Princeton's. I don't particularly think Lax, there was any mention of Princeton's incorporation documents in there, but yet they did find in that case in particular that immunity applied as well. In particular, Ryan case, another educational case, there was no mention of the incorporations in that case.
It may be hard to articulate a test, but can you see a difference between a chamber symphony performance and a rock star who is the most successful earner in the history of music?
I think with regards to, if you had to take a broad view, because all these performers, they go back and they have cultural value just in and of themselves. I think it's interesting, the lax that they mentioned, there's one word in there that I know it's been talked about, that the chamber was a nonprofit group, and that may have been a factor as to why the immunity applied. The chamber hired those musicians, by the way. Those musicians were hired. in itself. Maybe the chamber itself was nonprofit, but the musicians were not. Mm-hmm. So I think just going to answer your question, Chief Justice, no, because I think intrinsically they all offer in their own way their own cultural value, their own entertainment and recreational value, which is also something that this court over the years has indicated that that's an important and intrinsic value for, with regards to what education universities do. They'll all bring in something to the table, if you will, to what they do. And I know the Mekas, they have the example of Eminem in particular. I think there's probably maybe, I don't know if it's for fat courses, maybe discussing his rap at some point in time. I know we've seen over the years courses developing and talking about Beatles, medleys and lyrics. The point is that they all have some cultural relevance with regards to that.
To the extent your adversaries have dwelled a bit on the commercial aspect and question of profit and so forth, do you have any response to the suggestion that an event-by-event analysis of profit or not and coverage of university out-of-pocket expenses would be required or should be required under the test?
And I think what's been indicated has been the for-profit companies. And Justice, you particularly talked about the fact that we do want to promote the hiring of these professionals to help facilitate the concert, if you will. I think it's the distinction without a difference, and that's, I think, has been picked up in here. Because
I'm talking about setting of fees that come back to the university. The one, I think it was $1.50 per ticket, and the $10,000 amount that the university gets for using the forum.
And this goes back to whether or not there should be even discussion of a dominant motive as well. And I think the O'Connor case was strong in that. It decided not that long ago that because we view educational institutions as well as religious institutions, we view them plainly, that we're not going to require them to have any scrutiny here. And that's in promotion
Ryan says that as well, the
statute. Mm-hmm. And I think that's consistent there. And so going back to this distinction and discussions, just general comments about things being commercial, we're looking again to what the educational institution is doing here. And at the time, it was promoting its stated goals. And that's why, going back again, why I pointed out that immunity has been found in certain cases where there was no articles. In this case in particular, there were articles. These articles, well standard, over 60 years old, has the word concerts right in there. That's pretty strong evidence in this case. And this, I don't think there's any doubt or any dispute that this was a concert that was going on here. We're not arguing that it wasn't. And I think we're getting away from, is it art and artistic? I don't think the courts want to be involved in such venues and arguments such as that. Touch your hand of question, Justice. So it, with regards to that, I think it's a distinction without a difference. And I think a lot of what we're learning today is a lot of the social values that this state in general wants to promote. And that's the promotion of the cultural and the arts and education, and even the hiring of the proper professionals to do what they need to do as well. And the facts, and going back to this case, because the dissent is why we're here today in part as well, Mammoth was involved, as for the reasons I stated before. They signed the contract, they hosted the venue, they had the right of approval or not as well. So it wasn't a situation that they were completely hands-off in here. Obviously, the whole point of having the concerts for the public was a decision of Mammoth itself. It wasn't Ticketmaster per se. It was Mammoth, let's have these concerts here for the community. And that is pursuant to its stated goals as well.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Nothing else, Chief Justice. Thank you very much.
Thank you to all counsel for raising